Good morning, and welcome to the Tyson Foods quarterly investor earnings call. All participants will be in listen-only mode. Should you need assistance, please signal a conference specialist by pressing the star key followed by zero. After today's presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. To ask a question, you may press star then one on your touch-tone phone. To withdraw your question, please press star then two. Please note this event is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Jon Kathol, Vice President of Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning, and welcome to the Tyson Foods Incorporated fourth quarter and 2016 fiscal year earnings conference call. On today's call are Donnie Smith, Chief Executive Officer, Tom Hayes, President, and Dennis Leatherby, Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer. Slides accompanying today's prepared remarks are available as a quarterly supplemental report on the Investor Relations section of our website at ir.tyson.com. Tyson Foods issued an earnings news release this morning, which has been filed with the SEC on Form 8K, and also is available on our website at ir.tyson.com. Our remarks today include forward-looking statements as defined in the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. These statements reflect current views with respect to future events, such as Tyson's outlook for future performance on sales, margin, earnings growth, and various other aspects of its business. These statements are subject to risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from our expectations and projections. I encourage you to read the release issued earlier this morning and our filings with the SEC for a discussion of the risks that can affect our business. During the call, there will be a discussion of some items that do not conform to U.S. Generally Accepted Accounting Principles, or GAAP, including adjusted EPS. Tyson has reconciled these items to the most comparable GAAP measures in the earnings release and on our website at ir.tyson.com. I would like to remind everyone that this call is being recorded on Monday, November 21st, 2016 at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. A replay of today's call will be available on Tyson's website approximately 1 hour after the conclusion of this call. This broadcast is the property of Tyson Foods, and any redistribution, retransmission, or rebroadcast of this call in any form without the express written consent of Tyson Foods is strictly prohibited. I'll now turn the call over to Donnie Smith.
Thanks, John. Good morning, everyone, and thanks for joining us today. Before we get into our earnings discussion, I'd like to comment on this morning's other announcement. As you may have heard, Tom Hayes will be succeeding me as CEO effective at calendar year end. The board and I agree that now is an excellent time to make this transition. The company's performing exceptionally well and realizing significant growth and shareholder returns through our hybrid strategy of branded prepared foods and fresh meats. Simply put, I believe the company has a bright future and that Tom is the right leader for this next phase of our development. We've worked hard to create a strong platform that will take Tyson into the future, and we have an impressive pipeline of talented management to help us do that. We're leveraging scale, developing our brands, and building value for shareholders. Since his promotion to president earlier this year, Tom has reminded me, the board, and the rest of the management team on a daily basis exactly why we hold him in such high regard. He's a capable leader, a strategic thinker, and a team player who's ready to build on what we've accomplished to date and drive this company forward. He has the skills to deliver on our strategic goals and complete the transition toward our hybrid model. I've committed to him I will remain available as a consultant for the next 3 years. As you can imagine, it's a time of mixed emotions for me. I joined Tyson Foods 36 years ago and have spent my entire professional life here. In return, I've been given opportunities I could never have imagined. At Tyson, I've worked alongside some of the best, most impressive people you could ever hope to meet, and together, we've worked tirelessly to build a great company. I'd like to thank both the board and the Tyson family for their encouragement and support, without which I could have not succeeded. More than just delivering good financial results, we've been able to make a positive difference in people's lives. I'm thankful for the 7 years I had the opportunity to serve Tyson as its CEO, and I'm excited about its future and confident that Tom is the right leader for the next chapter. And with that, let's now turn to the quarter. Fiscal 2016 was our fourth consecutive year of record results, with record operating income, operating margin, adjusted EPS, cash flow, pork segment margins, and prepared food segment margins. Adjusted EPS grew 39% versus the prior year. Using the midpoint of our fiscal 2017 guidance of 470 to 485, the projected EPS five-year CAGR would be 19%, which is outstanding. Fourth quarter results were slightly below our internal expectations, impacted largely by $35 million or 6 cents a share in mark-to-market and lower cost of market accounting treatments, primarily in beef and pork, a production issue in prepared foods, and one-time factors in chicken that Tom will go into in more detail shortly. Synergies for the fourth quarter were $165 million, with $67 million incremental over Q4 of last year. Synergies for the year were $580 million, with $258 million incremental to last year and well exceeding our $500 million target. We currently expect synergies of approximately $675 million in fiscal 2017, below our previous estimate of $700 million. While we still expect to achieve at least $700 million in total, due to the timing of some projects, we now expect some of the synergies to fall into fiscal 18. We bought back 8.3 million shares of stock for $600 million in Q4, excluding repurchases to offset dilution from equity compensation. For the fiscal year, share repurchases totaled $28.2 million for $1.7 billion. We were able to repurchase this level due to our record operating cash flows of more than $2.7 billion. 2016 was a great year, beyond setting records. We made tremendous progress, leveraging the combined strength of the Tyson team, and we're well positioned for even more success in fiscal 17. Now let's go to Tom for a report on our operating segments.
Thanks a lot, Donnie. Let's begin with the prepared food segment. Operating income in the fourth quarter was $133 million with a 7.2% operating margin. Average price was down 3.9%, primarily reflecting the pass-through of overall lower raw material costs. Adjusting for the additional week in 2015, volume compared to Q4 last year was up 2.6%. Margin in the prepared food segments were lower year-over-year, primarily due to a sharp increase in pork trim raw material costs in Q4 that were not passed through to customers within the quarter, and increased marketing spending. In the food service portion of prepared foods in Q4, we had strong results in our bakery business, but softer than expected results in prepared meats. As a part of our efforts to improve our production network, we closed a plant and transferred production to newer facilities. Unfortunately, this transition wasn't seamless, causing us to incur overtime in our operations and higher distribution costs in an attempt to satisfy our customers' needs. We've since taken steps to improve production efficiency and are building additional network capacity for long-term growth. Despite these challenges, prepared foods had a record year and delivered planned synergies. Synergies for the segment were $119 million for the quarter and $38 million incremental to Q4 last year. For the full year, prepared food synergies were $441 million with $156 million incremental to fiscal 2015. For the fiscal year, prepared foods operating income was $734 million with a record 10% margin. Pricing was down 3.4% on lower raw materials. Adjusted volume was down 1% for the year, primarily due to the rationalization of some unprofitable ingredient meat SKUs. We're growing volume where we want to grow by focusing on strategic brands and categories to increase operating income over time. We supported our brand equities across prepared foods through marketing, advertising, and promotional spending to grow volume and secure our position on the shelves of retailers and restaurants. For example, we increased our support behind the Jimmy Dean frozen breakfast franchise and Hillshire Farm lunch meat. And in our fourth quarter, volume was up 9% and 28% respectively. We also grew our share by 1.5 points in the frozen protein breakfast category and by 2.3 points in lunch meat. We expect beef and pork raw material to be deflationary to input costs in addition to pricing in 2017. We'll continue to invest in innovation, new product launches, and MAP to grow our brands. We're expecting margins in 2017 to be similar to those in 2016, with solid volume growth that outperforms the categories where we compete. In the chicken segment for the fourth quarter, operating income was $220 million with a 7.8% operating margin. Adjusted volume was down 3.2% due to a planned temporary decrease in production. An average price was up 3.5% as we focused on selling higher margin products. There were three factors leading to the lower-than-expected results in the fourth quarter in chicken. First, our production forecasts are based on consumer demand, and through our sales and operations planning process, we received indications of lower demand in July and August. As our business model dictates, we reduced production in response to softening consumer demand. Secondly, we absorbed a sharp spike in soybean meal input costs within the quarter that affected margins in the short term. And third, having completed the restaging of the Tyson brand, we turned MAP back on to grow points of distribution heading into the new fiscal year. As a result, our Tyson brand frozen value-added chicken volume was up 6% in Q4 of 2016 and is gaining momentum, portending very strong chicken segment volume in our first quarter of 2017. Chicken segment results for the year were outstanding. With an 11.9% operating margin, we were just shy of last year's record return. Operating income was $1.3 billion. Adjusted volume was down 0.7% due to the reduced demand in the fourth quarter that I just spoke to. Average pricing was down for the year by 1.5% as some input cost deflation was passed on to customers. The USDA is now projecting chicken supply to be in the U.S. to increase by 2% in 2017, and our input costs should be flat. We'll continue growing where we want to grow by selling more Tyson-branded value-added chicken. We expect the returns for the chicken segment to be at or above the upper end of our normalized range of 9 to 11% again in fiscal 2017. Moving on to the beef segment, operating income was $139 million in Q4 with a 4% operating margin. Adjusted volume was down slightly by 0.3%, while average sales price declined 14.9%, reflecting reduced cattle costs. For the fiscal year, operating income was $347 million, with a 2.4% operating margin. Adjusted volume was up slightly by 0.8%, while pricing declined 14.9%, again, on lower cattle costs. Following a rocky start to the year, the beef segment finished strong, with favorable pricing environment continuing into our Q1. We're expecting our beef margin to be at the upper end of its normalized range of 1.5% to 3% in fiscal 17, reflecting the favorable environment that we expect to continue for some time. I'll wrap up the segment performance by recapping the pork segment results. Operating income was $108 million with an 8.7% operating margin. Adjusted volume was up slightly at 0.4%, while average pricing was up 1% in the quarter. For the year, operating income was $528 million with a record 10.8% margin. Excluding the additional week in fiscal 2015 and the divestiture of our Heinhold business in Q1 of last year, pork volume was up 1.2% and average price was down 4.4%, reflecting lower hog costs. In fiscal 2017, we expect a favorable operating environment to continue and are estimating an operating margin of at least 10% for the year. Currently, the USDA is projecting supplies of our protein categories to be up 2 to 3%. Next year with moderate export growth. Domestic demand for protein has been strong, and we expect it will continue in a deflationary environment, and we're very well positioned across all proteins and customer channels to respond to the changing demands of consumers. We're making significant investments in consumer insights, innovation, our brands, our customer relationships, our facilities, and our people. In addition to $1 billion in CapEx in 17, we're investing in improving safety, animal well-being, warehousing and distribution, and attracting and retaining talent throughout the organization. These investments should improve costs and turnover, as well as continue to drive long-term sustainable growth. While protein demand overall is strong and growing, we're seeing a shift in how consumers spend, specifically in retail. When beef prices decline, more consumers buy beef as relative price premium versus other forms of protein narrows. This interaction is especially pronounced in the dynamic between ground beef and hot dogs. While the hot dog category overall was down in the 13 weeks ended October 2nd, we grew ballpark volume by 11% and increased volume share by 2.5 points. This is a great example of the power of a strong leading brand like Ballpark and the consumer loyalty and strong customer support it garners. Overall, Tyson Foods is performing very well at retail. In the 13-week period roughly corresponding with our fourth quarter, our core nine product lines grew dollar share in all nine categories and grew volume share in eight of nine categories. In total, we grew volume 9.6%, 8 points ahead of total food and beverage. If you take a look at the slides that we posted online, you'll see that both the Core 9 and Total Tyson at retail are outpacing growth among the top 10 branded food-only companies in both sales and volume dollars. In sales volume, Tyson is only one of three companies that posted positive volume growth. In sales dollars, we are the only company to show positive growth with a 4.7% in the Core 9 and 2.1% overall, and that's in a deflationary protein pricing environment. I want to extend my congratulations to Andy Callahan and the entire retail packaged brands team for their outstanding performance. Turning to the food service channel, traffic remains roughly flat, and growth is driven by average check size, which is up about 2%. That was the case in calendar year 2015 and thus far in 2016, and it's expected to continue through 2017. And despite a lackluster environment, Tyson Foods is doing well at food service. Our insights team, using data provided by NPD, has developed analytic tools that give us a better look into the broadline distribution sector within food service. Broadline distribution has long been an important channel to us, but now we're getting a better perspective on the role we play, the importance of value-added chicken, and the strength of the Tyson brand. For the 52 weeks ended in July, the most recent data available, our volume grew 3.9%, more than double the category growth rate. By far, Tyson is the largest brand with a 33% share and growing. The next closest competitor is private label with a 20% share, and it's worth noting we're a substantial producer of private label value-added chicken for our distributor customers. We look forward to being able to give you more and more insight into our food service business as our insights team continues to build out more analytic tools, which is a great example of the strength of our combined capabilities across the company. I continue to be encouraged by the pace of new product innovation as we extend our brands into adjacencies. Sales from new products launched in the previous 3 years has resulted in a vitality index of 14% in retail and 21% in food service. When we think about innovation, it's not only about new products. We really start to understand how people shop and how shopper behavior opens up new platforms for innovation. Partnering with our customers to leverage the opportunities of the e-commerce space is a great example of this. We began selling Tyson Tastemaker meal kits through e-commerce in September. While it's still early, we're very encouraged by the initial consumer acceptance and feedback. This platform combines our innovation capabilities, supply chain at scale, and leading brands in a way no other food company can. Expect to hear more in 2017 as we extend this platform into multiple formats in e-commerce and traditional retail. 2016 was a great year, but more importantly, we laid the foundation for 2017 and beyond. We're capitalizing on our momentum and taking a systematic approach to success. I'm now going to turn it over to Dennis, who will report on the fourth quarter and the year, as well as our expectations for fiscal 2017.
Thanks, Tom, and good morning, everyone. Fiscal 16 was our fourth consecutive year of record earnings as we continue to demonstrate the power of our diversified business model, producing strong, stable margins. We are investing our cash flows back into our businesses as we focus on long-term, sustainable growth. Total company return on sales was a record 7.7%, for fiscal 16. Operating income was also a record at $2.8 billion, representing a 26% increase over adjusted operating income a year ago. On an adjusted basis, this represents our fourth consecutive year of growth in operating income and return on sales. Our record adjusted EPS of $4.39 represents a 39% increase over $3.15 per share last year. Our operating cash flow was a record $2.7 billion, and we have invested $695 million in capital expenditures. This outpaced our depreciation by $78 million as we continue to invest in projects with a focus on delivering high ROIC. We also used our record cash flow in fiscal 16 to return cash to shareholders and to retire debt. We increased the dividend for fiscal 16 by 50% from the prior year. We also repurchased 28.2 million shares for $1.7 billion during the year. Combined, we returned over $1.9 billion to shareholders in share repurchases and dividends. And that's after we retired some high coupon debt during the year, which further strengthened our balance sheet. In fiscal 16, our effective tax rate was 31.8%, and on an adjusted basis was 33.8%. Net debt to EBITDA for the past 12 months was 1.7 times. Including cash of $349 million, net debt was $5.9 billion, and total liquidity was $1.3 billion. Net interest expense was $57 million during the fourth quarter and $243 million during fiscal 2016. For the quarter, average diluted shares outstanding were 381 million. ROIC was 18.1% and is approaching the pre-Hillshire acquisition level of 20.5%, which illustrates the strength and stability of our earnings, as well as our commitment to creating incremental shareholder value. Now looking forward, here are some thoughts on fiscal 17. We expect similar revenues as we grow volume across each segment, offset by the impact of lower beef prices. Net interest expense should approximate $225 million. We currently estimate our effective tax rate to be around 35%. CapEx is expected to approximate $1 billion as we focus on capacity expansion and operational improvements that create long-term shareholder value. Prior to adjusting for any additional share repurchases subsequent to this call, and based on our average share price so far in Q1, we expect our average diluted shares to be around 376 million. This morning, we reported our board of directors again increased our regular quarterly dividend by another 50% from 15 cents to 22.5 cents per share on our Class A common stock payable on December 15th. This increase brings our dividend to 90 cents per share annually for Class A shares from 60 cents. As we stated last year, we expect to increase future dividends for Class A shares by at least 10 cents per share annually. This increase and our commitment to steady future dividend increases demonstrates our confidence in the enduring strength and stability of our cash generation capabilities. We have a tremendous amount of momentum going into fiscal 17 as we come off a year of 39% EPS growth. Our fiscal first quarter in 17 is off to a phenomenal start, which gives us confidence in achieving annual adjusted EPS growth of 7 to 10% to a range of $4.70 to $4.85 per share. This new guidance range represents a five-year adjusted compounded annual growth rate of at least 19%. While we are pleased with the growth we have achieved, we are excited about the significant increase in investments in fiscal 17 that will drive growth for the future. In addition to $1 billion in CapEx, we are planning heavy investments, as Tom mentioned previously, while we continue to grow organically. Additionally, in fiscal 17, we expect to return even more cash to shareholders by our announced increased dividend and additional share repurchases. We see compelling value in our shares, and so far in the first quarter of fiscal 17, we've repurchased another 3.4 million shares for $240 million. While some of our investments will not immediately fall to the bottom line, we are creating a sustainable blueprint for success that will allow us to grow in a responsible way for the future. In closing, we take a long-term view toward investing in our people, our brands, and our facilities, which will drive value and generate attractive shareholder returns. That concludes our prepared remarks. Denise, we're ready to begin Q&A.
Thank you, Mr. Leatherby. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, you may press star, then one on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the keys. If your question has been addressed, you may withdraw from the queue by pressing star, then two. Please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up. If you have further questions, you may re-enter the question queue. And your first question will come from Ken Zaslow of BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Donnie, congratulations. It's been a pleasure, and I wish you well. And Tom, congratulations on your promotion, I think. With that, Donnie, you know, I have to say your timing, you know, of your retirement may not be perceived as optimal. Tyson is in the middle of a class action suit. Earnings fell short of expectations on the perception that you've kind of reached peak earnings, and you're in a debate over your Georgia Dock pricing, it seems like. So let me just tackle one issue at a time. Why not hand the reins over once the dust settles a little bit? Second, you know, how much of the earnings shortfall in the quarter will be recaptured in the first quarter? Third, you know, if Georgia Dock prices go away, how much would Tyson's outlook actually change? And then Dennis, just to kind of go back on this, is on the share repurchases, given that your stock seems to be probably pricing down at least 10 to 15% today, what is the expectation for share repurchases going into this first quarter?
Okay, so I'm going to take the first one of that, and then Tom and Dennis will start from there. Ken, I think this is an excellent time for us to be making this transition. The company's off to a phenomenal start for the quarter. We're on a very solid foundation. You know, as we've said before, we dispute the claims. We're looking forward to our opportunity to defending ourselves in court on the litigation. So that has nothing to do with the transition. So yeah, there's not a better time. We've got a great team. Tom's a very capable leader. So in terms of all of that, there couldn't be a better time to be making this transition. Now, Tom, I'll let you start on the second, third, and fourth.
Yeah. So thanks. Yeah. Thanks, Ken. And what I'll say is, timing, I think from everybody's perspective, actually couldn't be better given the great shape that Donnie has brought the company to. And, you know, we are all just thrilled about the opportunities ahead of us. As it relates to, you know, the Q4 to Q1, yeah, there's a shortfall in Q1, and I think largely you'll see it show up in a strong Q4 show up in Q1. So, the lower than normal results in prepared foods and chicken sort of relate to MAP spending that I spoke to. But I think we're in a, you know, great shape, particularly in beef and pork, which I think shouldn't surprise you. As it relates to the Georgia Dock, you know, this is what we talked about before several times, is that we really don't use it that much. It's about 4, maybe a little less, our total chicken volume sales that are priced off the Georgia Dock. We have, talked in several times that we use a lot of different pricing mechanisms. And, you know, we are diversified. We don't feel like it has a significant impact, you know, to us. But the Georgia Dock has had, you know, very little influence on our pricing strategy. And Dennis, I don't know if you want to add.
As far as the share repurchases go, Ken, on that question, last quarter we bought $600 million worth of stock. We bought $240 million so far, and we have a phenomenal quarter going, and which means heavy cash flow. So you can expect we'll have another big quarter. I won't get into the exact number, but we'll buy quite a bit of stock back.
Just to be clear, so how much of the, just making sure I get the answers, how much of your earnings shortfall will come back in the first quarter? And then if Georgia Dock prices go completely away, will that have any impact on Tyson's outlook?
As far as the earnings going into this quarter, all of it will come back into the quarter from the shortfall standpoint. As far as the Georgia Dock goes, how much it will impact, it will have no impact if Georgia Dock went away.
Okay, thank you.
And
the next question will come from Jeremy Scott of CLSA. Please go ahead.
I appreciate some of the clarity there, and congratulations, Donnie and Tom. I echo that, but I also echo some of the surprise maybe at the timing. Just to follow up on the Georgia Dock, can you repeat what percentage of your sales are tied to the Georgia Dock? And then secondly, can all of your clients that are pricing on Georgia Dock without restriction or penalty opt to price on the index other than Georgia Dock, theoretically right now?
Yeah, so to repeat, it's about 4, maybe 3.5 to 4% of our total chicken sales are off the Georgia Dock. And, you know, customers can negotiate to price it off of whatever index they would like. What we have found is that's not a good proxy for cost. We have some very sophisticated buyers that, you know, tend to look more at grain input than they do the Georgia Dock. Certainly, it's got a lot of history, and it's something that's been around for a while. But we find increasingly our customers are looking to have discussions about where do they think grain is. And then, you know, in addition to that, I'd say there's a lot of discussions, which we've also spoken about this. It's less about, price than it is about everything else we offer as a company. And we're getting more and more into those discussions, frankly, and less about, the absolute price of, input costs. So, again, I don't know if that answers your question, but that is the way we think about it. It's a very, very, very small part of what we do.
Okay. I just wanted to ask about chicken again. Obviously, a big surprise miss in the quarter. It didn't really add up to any of our models. I appreciate the three factors that you flagged. Can you quantify them in terms of what would the impact on margins of each factor and what how they will roll over into the first quarter?
Yeah, so I won't go through the specific impact of each one. What I will say is when the soybean meal market went up, we are probably less hedged as we go towards the end of the year. We're looking for the new crop. That is something that certainly, if there are spikes, it's going to play through our numbers. As we go through our negotiations with customers, we look to capture everything that we can. We have, I think in the last call, we talked about severe run-ups. Quick, the slope of the curve is high. We have a harder time passing through those costs to our customers. So that was certainly a big impact.
And just to reiterate, Jeremy, we are saying that for the year that the earnings in chicken will be at or above the normalized range.
Right.
Okay. And then just lastly on the CapEx, what exactly is driving the incremental investment there? I realize you talked about some of the initiatives that you're taking, but can it break that down into pieces?
So the biggest one is we are spending quite a bit of money to expand production at our plants. We've got a lot of growth opportunities. I mentioned briefly in the prepared meats sector and food service, we have some capital spending there. We have increased our spending increased our production capacity on cooked chicken, fully cooked chicken, and we're pretty close to being well through that capacity, and we need to build more. So think about the largest percentage of that will be focused on growth. And we have, in addition to that, we're spending to make sure that all of our processes working well, animal well-being, a lot of sustainability efforts. But to answer your question on CapEx, it's predominantly focused on growth.
Okay. I'll jump back in the queue. Thank you.
And the next question will come from Adam Samuelson of Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Yes, thanks. Good morning, everyone, and I'll echo Ken and Jeremy's comments. Donnie, congratulations, and Tom, congratulations as well. Maybe my first question in prepared foods, and just to be clear on the margin guidance for fiscal 17 of 10%, basically flat margins year over year, can you quantify both the fourth quarter? It seems like there was some production issues that you don't seem to be expecting to lap. There's still about $100 million of year-over-year synergies. You're growing your volumes strongly in your highest margin value-added categories in the core nine, and you've got some nice commodity deflation at your back. Can you talk about kind of how the level of reinvestment spend in prepared foods that you wouldn't expect a sharper, some better margin leverage and or kind of earnings improvement? Thanks.
Sure. Yeah, we think about the ROS is flat, of course, OI, but we think what we want to make sure that we continue to do is focus on volume. Hopefully you see in those charts, if you were able to see those online, the investments are paying off. So we have significant investment going into, not the least of which is MAP in Q4, that it was a big impact on the rate. But then as you look at what we're doing for preparing ourselves for this 17, it's all about making sure that we have the shelf space, we are driving innovation, and we continue to invest and, frankly, lift the investment in some of the categories that weren't ready for and some of the brands that weren't ready for the MAP spending as much as they are today. So, we think in terms of the fourth quarter played out pretty much as we thought it would, and as we talked in the last call, we're executing that strategy that we want to be continually at 10%, and we did it in 2016. With more protein on the market next year, we want to make sure we're in a good position that I spoke to. and we want to continue to drive category growth with our customers. So we're continuing to invest significantly and growing where we want to grow, which is in the core nine, as we've demonstrated.
Okay, that's helpful. And then maybe switching gears to chicken and understanding that there were some issues in the fourth quarter that it doesn't sound like you think repeat, maybe other than the MAP spending, and you've guided margins at or above the high end of the 11% normalized range. Can you talk about kind of the bigger swing factors in chicken as you look out to fiscal through 17? I mean, the feed costs would, given the harvest that we just had, would seem to be fairly benign. Seems like you got good mixed tailwinds in terms of your value-added business. Export markets are okay. Can you talk about some of the bigger kind of drivers of variance that you'd think about and upper downside risks in chicken for the next 12 months?
Sure. I mean, Adam, you called it as it relates to the grain. We feel like that is, you know, pretty much flat. We'll be in the same position in 17 as we are in 16 as far as we know today. What we continue to do is drive the core of that business up. So retail and food service, value-added products, and we drive the non-core, the commodity, leg quarters, and byproduct down. So roughly the value-added products are up about 4%, the commodity products down 7%. So the net is, as you look at the total, you know, chicken platform, you see it's roughly flat, but the mix in between is continuing to improve towards value-added.
All right. Thank you. I'll pass it along.
And the next question will come from Robert Moskow of Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. I thought also one of the comments for, about chicken was that you had expected chicken demand to be down in July, August, so you reduced production, and you said it was related to consumer demand, and I guess that's related to lower beef prices. Was consumer demand as weak as you thought it was for chicken? I mean, it seems to me that, you know, demand for chicken had been a huge part of the story overall. Are you seeing any kind of weakening in that regard? And then I had a follow-up on trim prices, you know, which we track. Other than a little bit of a spike in July, I really didn't see anything else for the quarter. In fact, they came down quite a bit in August and September. So I wanted to maybe get a sense of just how sharp of an increase that was for your prepared foods margins.
Sure. Yeah, so as it relates to poultry first, the volume was softer for sure, Rob, in Q4. So we saw it coming. We have, you know, a good S&OP process. I think it probably is as good as we've ever experienced. And having those signals allows us to modify production in advance of seeing that. Now, as Dennis has said and we've talked about, we've seen that come back in the first quarter here. So the volume was off, and it now has come back. And, you know, the other thing that we want to make sure that we do is we have, you know, lower inventories. We want to make sure that we don't run into a season with high inventories, and, you know, that certainly helped us. We're selling through the inventory to a large degree in Q1. So it was the right thing to certainly pull back on production. As it relates to the trim pricing, so if you look at, you know, 72s and 42s trim for the prepared foods business, and particularly as it relates to hot dogs and, you know, grinding materials for sausage and so forth, there was a sharp spike, and then it dropped off dramatically. As the trim is dropping off, you know, we have, you know, it's good for us because costs are going down or prices up, but when they shoot up in any given period, the slope of the change is going to cause us, particularly on the food service business where we're formula priced, to have our raw material costs higher, and our formula price is lagging by about 30 days. So that was a short-term impact. We're through that, but that's the situation there.
And why do you think chicken demand is coming back? I mean, beef prices continue to fall, so, you know, you might see more consumer demand shifting to beef. I mean, what? How do you know it's not just a head fake and it might, you know, get weak again?
You know, we see that the value that we provide through for all of our customers is predominantly focused on how they grow their categories overall. And when we look at chicken, you know, we have significant, you know, MAP spending that they want. They want us to invest in the business and continue to drive growth. We have seen some, certainly some share gains, and that's something that we're tremendously excited about. As we look at how chicken, the retail value-added poultry or the Tyson brand at retail, it's been doing very well. We've got a lot of innovation behind it. So those are sort of the key drivers. And some of the food service business that we've picked up over the summer is starting to kick in. So there's a lot of things that, you know, I can't give you all the detail on it, Rob, but there's a lot of things that are sort of working together that give us, you know, tremendous confidence about, you know, chicken volume, not just Q1, but for 17.
Okay. Congrats again, Donnie, and good luck, Tom.
Thanks.
The next question will be from Ken Goldman of J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi, and thanks for taking my question. I just wanted to make sure I understood, when you're talking about all the shortfall in the fourth quarter chicken business shifting into 1Q, can you just elaborate on what that means? I wasn't quite certain if you're talking profit or volume.
It's more profit, Ken.
Okay, with that in mind, thank you for that. Can you help us, and I know you're getting the same question in 10 different ways, so forgive me, but can you help walk us through the mechanics of that? Because I'm not quite sure, like the soy issue, it doesn't reverse, right? MAP spending, I assume it's not coming down in the first quarter. So I guess it's mostly a fixed cost deleverage issue that gets reversed. Does that imply that volumes have to be significantly better than they usually are in 1Q? Again, you've talked about this. I just want to make sure I'm thinking about this in the right way.
Yeah, sure. So, Ken, soybean meal, you've seen the chart. Everybody's seen it. It spiked up, and then it's almost looked like the shape of an M. It was up, and it was down, and up, and now it's flattened back out, right? So, yes, it has come back down and is staying down, so that is helping our cost base. And, you know, I'd say as it relates to, you know, the feed costs in Q4 are – it's always a lag in our COGS. So now that, in speaking to the profit, you know, we are going to be in a much better shape based on doing a couple of things. One is reducing the amount that we produce, so our inventories we're drawing down, and also, you know, continuing to do what I said, which is focus on driving growth at retail through the Tyson brand and driving growth with the new food service customer places.
Okay, and then I may have missed this. I wanted to ask about retail beef and pork prices. They really haven't fallen as much as wholesale and farm prices have for cattle and hogs. I know that retail prices are always much less volatile. It just seems a little more so at this time that they're really kind of being sticky. I'm just curious what your updated thoughts are on, you know, if that changes, when that might change. Are you having any conversations with your grocery customers about the, you know, the proper prices that they should have on a shelf at this point?
Yeah, you know, we they kind of run that. We don't influence necessarily the price that they're going to be charging on the shelf, but you got it nailed. The dynamic is that, you know, livestock prices have not come they've come down faster than the retail prices have, which has, you know, allowed us to make the margins that we have right now in both beef and pork. So, you know, how that sticks for the season, I think it remains to be seen. But that is the dynamic that's, you know, allowing us to have a very, very strong first quarter.
Okay, thanks so much.
And the next question will come from Farha Aslam of Stephens Inc. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Again, on chicken, could you just share with us your commentary about demand declines and recovery? Is that for Tyson specific, or is that the industry? And why would Tyson's demand be different than the industry?
So far this time, we're talking about Tyson as that's all we can really speak to, right? I mean, that's what we focus on. And it is the Tyson brand at retail, significant innovation, advertising. We have been on air with television. We're seeing some the definite result of that activity, like I mentioned, up 6%, heading into, you know, much stronger Q1. And I'll speak to, again, hate to be a broken record here, but we have taken on some significant business throughout, whether it's food service or retail, predominantly on the Tyson brand. Certainly there is some retail private label that we play in, but it's predominantly the Tyson brand that we're seeing the increases in.
Okay. And then when you look at your prepared foods business and the operational issues that you faced during the quarter, Could you roughly quantify how much they were, and if they're completely fixed, any carryover to the first quarter?
Yeah, so the we won't quantify it in specific terms, but we'll say that it was, you know, some of the downdraft on Q4. There was, as we closed one of our factories that produced pizza toppings, we had challenges moving to the factories that we were actually increasing capacity at. So it was not our finest hour in terms of, you know, how we execute, and we are in a much better position now because we have, the good news is we have strong customer demand, and we are building capacity to meet that customer demand. And it was a, you know, one-time issue. There's going to be, you know, certainly as we, you know, ramp up to serve the volume, we're going to, you know, see some, you know, continue at capacity numbers. But I would say that, you know, it was predominantly due to that plant closure that affected it. And sorry, I can't quantify it for you, but that's the story.
But you're done with it now.
We are still going to be going through the first half of this year, getting some stability against it. In terms of, you know, impacting our numbers, it's more of an opportunity in order to, you know, drive the results, getting all the volume that we have subscribed out the door in terms of customer orders. That's the biggest challenge. I would say that all the supply chain issues will be solved for the second half of the year. That's when the significant stability will come, as well as our ability to serve all the orders that we have on the improved demand.
That's helpful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And the next question will come from Akshay Jagdali of Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Thank you. And first, congrats, Donnie. I know with everything going on with the stock today, that's been pushed to the side, but congratulations on your retirement, I guess. But my question is, again, on chicken. You know, I just wanted, is it fair to say that if you didn't have these three one-time issues, that your numbers would have been, for chicken, would have been above the normalized range? I mean, just, I know you're hesitating for some reason to quantify it, but just wanted to first understand the magnitude of the impact.
Yeah, the answer to that, actually, is yes. They would have been within the normalized range that you have typically become used to, and it is, you know, unfortunately a one-time occurrence that, you know, we are feeling good about in terms of Q1 and the rest of the year.
Okay, and then just related to the guidance, obviously, again, on chicken, you're guiding to, you know, similar results like this year, which is, you know, above the normal range, but I guess the market's not really believing that. So the demand issue, so what's priced into sort of your what's built into your projection? If retailers do reduce the price of beef and pork, you know, will that, I mean, are you able to navigate that through that and still deliver the results you're, you know, promising for next year? And then can you just elaborate a little bit more on what the demand issue was, you know, in terms of weakness, and why it caught you by surprise since you gave last your guidance?
Sure. So what I can tell you is we're 7 weeks into our fiscal year, and we have, you know, a lot more to come. We feel great about it. But everything that we know in terms of our beef and pork pricing and their chicken business and prepared foods, it's in our projection. And so, you know, as we move through the year, we feel like we're going to be in great shape. We're 7 weeks in, and that's everything that we know is in our projection. That's what I can say about that. In terms of, you know, demand signal, that's the, what drives our S&OP. The demand is that sometimes it's, you know, when you cross the end of a year, it's certainly difficult. But, you know, at the end of a quarter, I think of it as, well, you got to put those couple of months together or a couple of quarters together to really get a good look at what the demand is. And, you know, that's you know, not an insignificant thing, certainly as we're coming at the end of the fiscal year for us here. So getting into Q1, you'll see that those two things are offsetting. But certainly beef pricing, you know, has, I think, not necessarily help the other proteins, but beef pricing has been down significantly, so you see the volume up rather sharply on beef.
So again, what happened with the demand being weaker was related to beef pricing being lower? I'm just trying to understand what happened, what on demand for chicken really changed, because we just want to make our own judgments on whether that factor will continue in 17. Thank you.
Sure. I'd say beef was probably the largest. It's the sharpest up of all the proteins. You can't say that it's any one in particular issue. There's a lot of things that go to work to drive the volume. And, you know, customers are loading in at different times for the season. They're, you know, trailing off inventories. There's not a specific thing that you can pin it to other than, you know, we did see certainly beef was probably the largest factor.
Thank you.
The next question will be from Michael Piken of Cleveland Research. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Just a question on the pork segment. I mean, it looks like margins for the packers are at an all-time high, and just wondering, you know, if we should expect to see, you know, I know you've guided to 10% plus, but it looks like, you know, potentially fiscal 17 could even be better than 16. Is that a fair assessment of kind of the market?
Yeah, so, you know, it's definitely going to be a good year for pork. That's what we have, you know, guided to. Well above the normalized range of 6 to 8, where we said we think it's going to be, you know, 10 plus. So we continue to see strong demand for pork. It's seasonal for sure, but we have, you know, very strong demand for pork. And, you know, supplies are roughly, I think, in unison with demand, so that's a good thing for us. And so that's why, you know, for us, we feel like it's going to be, you know, a good year on pork.
As you look further ahead, two of the vertically integrated hog producers are adding some packing capacity, which is supposed to come online next summer. Are you guys already sort of looking at alternate suppliers, or how do you see your pork utilization rates trending as these other facilities come online, and how are you looking to source your hogs in the future? Thanks.
Yeah, so it looks like there's going to be sufficient harvest capacity to stay ahead of the increased hog supply. You know, our math is showing that the supply growth and demand growth, like I said, are relatively in balance over the next few years. And so that looks good for us. We feel like, you know, as it relates to the season, you know, the carcass weights are still not as high as you might think they would be, indicating the supply is relatively current. So, you know, it remains to be seen how that affects us, but we're feeling, you know, in a great position. We feel like we're well balanced between supply and demand.
Okay, thank you.
And the next question will be from David Palmer of RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning, and congrats, Tom and Donnie. First question, you noted that the Georgia dock price is not the primary driver of chicken pricing. Perhaps you could just talk about how Tyson is getting its chicken pricing, which I believe is up 3.5% this quarter, and what your near-term outlook is for pricing in that segment.
Yeah, so thank you. The Georgia dock is one of, you know, many elements that we use. I would say that, as we've talked about in the past, probably the best for us is if we have something that's tied to any indice, it's really the underlying grain. So if we have a customer that's willing to lock for a period of time, then it's smart for us to lock the grain underneath to make sure we have a margin that's locked up. Beyond that, I would say you continue to see our portfolio move more and more to what I'll call list pricing. List pricing with a promotional element on top of it. So regardless of whether it's food service or retail, that's the model that we have within prepared foods. A lot of the chicken value add acts like prepared foods. So I'd say that's the predominant model beyond locking in against a grain underlying input cost.
You know, as a follow-up to that, you discussed the soy spike over the summer and the impact on margins. Does this in some way reframe the cyclical nature of margins according to feed costs? In other words, if we were to see a significant reversal in feed costs, corn and soy, will the chicken segment margins perhaps dip below the long-term range of 9 to 11%, at least on a temporary basis, if that were to occur?
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, it depends on when they happen in the year and how steep the curve is. And so that's what's going to drive whether or not they're going to have a short-term, you know, impact and how acute it's going to be. So I think that's fair.
Thank you.
And the next question will be from Jeremy Scott of CLSA. Please go ahead.
Hey, thanks, guys, for the follow-up. I'm sure this won't surprise you, but I have a follow-up on chicken. Just the way I calculated, based on your commentary, the shortfall in the quarter was upwards of 80 to 120 million in chicken. And first of all, is that number somewhere in the ballpark? But secondly, when you say you will recapture that shortfall in the first quarter, you mean you will recapture the margin, not necessarily a piece of that 80 to 120 million. Are there mark-to-market losses that we need to be factoring in that will unlock in the first quarter, or how should we think about that?
Yeah, the mark-to-market, I'll ask Dennis to chime in here, but no, it's the margin structure that we're talking about coming back to where we expect it should be. And again, I'll just repeat that we have, you know, not small amounts of marketing, advertising, and promotional investment.
And as far as the mark-to-market, that's not much of a factor.
Okay. Thank you.
And ladies and gentlemen, this will conclude our question and answer session. I would like to hand the conference back over to Tom Hayes for his closing remarks.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. What I would like to say is, thank you for your interest and your continued interest during this Thanksgiving holiday season. Very happy that, you know, our investors, sell-side, buy-side analysts continue to be interested in our stock. And certainly thanks to Donnie Smith. He's been a great partner, bringing me up to speed on everything I need to know about the Tyson Foods family. And you know, as he said in his remarks, he's not going anywhere for 3 years. He's going to be on speed dial for me. So I'm very happy about that. So I would just say thank you very much for your attention, and I appreciate it, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, the conference has now concluded. Thank you for attending today's presentation. You may now disconnect.